All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 72. We decided to have an emergency or at least a breaking news Twitter space to talk to you about what's going on with Nebraska. It's going to be me. It's going to be my usual co-host, JD Moore, and it's going to be you. We want to hear from you. So we're going to go ahead and fire it up. We're going to go ahead and add JD as a co-host. But what we really want to do is hear from you and your thoughts. And I see folks queuing up right now. So let's go ahead and start that in a second. But JD, are you here? Just wanted to double check.
Yeah, I'm here. We're ready to go. Obviously, the breaking news, Scott Frost is the first coach to get the axe for this season. He is out as the head coach at Nebraska after a terrible loss to Georgia Southern, the first loss in Nebraska history where Nebraska scored more than 35 points in Memorial Stadium and ended up losing the game. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that Scott Frost left. I think it's a surprise to everybody that they didn't wait until October 1st in order to can him. Obviously, that's about a $7.5 million extra buyout that he's going to get. But hey, Nebraska is the first one on the clock to try to find themselves a new head coach. So, Bobak, I feel that we should probably listen to some callers here soon.
For sure. And I just want to say the coincidence is he lost to a team coached by the first coach to be fired in the 2021 season. So, you know, Clay Helton is, of course, at Georgia Southern. But let's get started. So the notorious Kakoa, we've got you up here. What's up?
Not much. So is anyone really surprised that Scott Frost was flamed out at Nebraska, considering he basically couldn't get the same type of athletes that he was getting at UCF in Nebraska? It's kind of hard to get a bunch of South Florida, Central Florida players to want to sign up to go play in Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, he was a hell of a coach at UCF, took them to program heights that never probably will ever be seen again. But at Nebraska, since they left the Big 12, they've done nothing. I mean, it's literally night and day. It's no surprise that he flamed out.
You know, and I know JD was about to jump in on that too. You know, it's interesting to see how that worked. Nebraska should be able to pull in people, and I know JD and I both agree on this. Granted, it's not as flashy and it doesn't necessarily have the talent in its backyard that Florida schools do, even the ones that aren't necessarily the big three that have constantly dominated over there. And UCF can pull in its own players now, especially even easier now that it's going to be moving to the Big 12. But for some reason, things weren't gelling there. And I don't know how much of that is coaching decisions or JD, what do you think?
I mean, when you go 5-22 in one score games, that's coaching decisions. Like, hands down, that's going to be a coaching issue every single time. And I mean, we saw in games with this year where there were questionable calls on special teams, when there were questionable calls on decisions to go for kicks or to go for fourth down. And we saw just a terrible defense. I think one thing that, you know, not everybody's really talking about is how much yards that they gave up to Georgia Southern in a game that they really should not have allowed that much offense to be given up in the first place. It all comes down to coaching. And we've known that Nebraska, you know, they've had a fairly decent recruiting class year after year under Scott Frost, you know, nowhere along the lines of, say, a Michigan, an Ohio State, or something else like that. But when it comes to the best of the rest, they have consistently been in that upper middle class in bringing in talent, and Scott Frost was able to bring in that talent, but there was no ability to develop these guys, to make these guys turn into NFL prospects, to make them these strong, competent guys that you want to see, that, you know, Wisconsin can turn around and turn just about any three-star farmer into a walk-on lineman. You could go around and turn Iowa kids into incredible defensive backs. You can turn them into great special teams players, but at Nebraska, we weren't seeing that at all, and that's always going to come back on coaching. So you talk about the possibility of, you know, if they maybe stayed in the Big 12 and they were able to compete in there or continue to recruit Texas or something else like that, I don't think that's necessarily the problem that Nebraska had. Nebraska had a lot of problems when it came to game time decisions, and it had a lot of problem in developing players. Because one of the other things that, you know, you got to talk about is Scott Frost had a generational quarterback in Mackenzie Milton, and then he was not able to do that at all when he was at Nebraska. We had problems with Adrian Martinez, and he ended up transferring to Kansas State, where he seems like he's doing pretty well under a new coach. You had Casey Thompson, who was at the University of Texas, transferred in, and he has not turned into the quarterback that Nebraska has necessarily wanted to see. We're continuing to see this kind of growth that needs to happen with these Nebraska players, but the coaches just aren't cutting it. And again, when you start losing so many one-score games, it ends up becoming not a problem of, oh, we're the unluckiest team ever. Eventually, it becomes a pattern for a reason, and that all has to do with head coaching.
Hey, Cody, we've let you up as well. What are your thoughts?
Two things. One thing, did you have Clay Helton ending Scott Frost's career at Nebraska on your bingo card? Because I didn't. And the second thing is, right now, as it stands, I don't think Nebraska is savable. I don't think you can save that school unless they do a USC thing where you just get rid of every single person in the athletic department coaching. You need a cleansing in that program. I think they can be what they used to be, but it's going to be a long, long road ahead for Nebraska. And I'm not even sure it's a desirable destination. You know, I really don't. I don't see the perks of being at Nebraska right now with the Big Ten being as dominant as it is, top heavy. I just don't see how Nebraska is a great coaching spot. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you know, I'm going to say this much. I just have to touch on Clay Helton only because I have said before, I did go to USC, so I was sort of shocked that they stuck with him for as long as they did there. But at the same time, I kind of felt, and I do feel it about just generally in college football, you see what the Peter principle that's sometimes described in business where you're promoted to the point where you're incompetent. And I think USC just wasn't Clay Helton's bag. And I wasn't optimistic, but I wasn't willing to say he was going to be garbage at Georgia Southern. And clearly, he's definitely, you know, so far, you know, great. He got his signature win in two games at Georgia Southern. So he can take that one to the bank. But I'm not, you know, I know JD's going to want to talk about that Nebraska's not an attractive job. I think it is an attractive job for a lot of reasons, too. And I know he's going to add to this. But first of all, being in the what is now one of the two peak conferences, because now it is simply the Big Ten and SEC's world, it is they have the facilities. They clearly have the alumni that are willing to pay $7 million extra dollars just to get rid of somebody a month early without necessarily a new head coach in the picture. So they definitely have the angry money there, and angry money can turn into some very attractive money for another head coach. So I'm going to just say that, but JD, I know you wanted to go into that.
Yeah. And I mean, again, this is going to be one of those Power Two conference teams where Nebraska is going to get, you know, that billion with a B with their conference every single year. And that's going to make it an attractive job regardless. You're still going to be playing high teams. You're still going to be playing in great atmospheres. And again, one of the things of, you mentioned it already, Bobak, with the ability to bring up the money. One of the other things you have to remember is Scott Frost has been an absolute disaster during this era, but Nebraska fans still show up anyway every single week to Memorial Stadium. We all know that the sellout streak is a bit of a misnomer at this point, and there's always been creative accounting in these last couple of years to make sure that the quote-unquote streak continues. But the bottom line is people are still packing out Nebraska, and it's still a popular place for fans to continue to congregate. And if you have the money and if you have the fan base, literally all you need after that is the recruiting and the coaching. We've shown that Nebraska can recruit at a national level. Again, not at the level of Ohio State or Michigan or Alabama or even USC possibly now at this point, but it's still a good enough job that you should be able to pack in the top half of the middle part of the pack when it comes to the Big Ten. And I think that's really what Nebraska is looking for right now. I don't think anybody's there going, hey, we need to be back in the national championship conversation, because again, that's not something that's happened for about 20 years now at this point, but they want to be able to compete at the same level of, hey, we should be able to beat teams like Iowa. We should be able to be at a similar place like Wisconsin is. We should be able to compete for the Big Ten West. We should be able to be in the mix for a Big Ten conference championship game, maybe once every 5 to 7 years or so. I don't think that's necessarily out of line. And I think if you get the right coach, you have the resources and the ability at Nebraska to do that. And I can't imagine why any coach would look at that and go, this is unsavable.
I think those are great points. I want to keep There's so many people I want to talk, and we want to get as many of you as we can. Zach, I know I let you up. What's up? You're at Nebraska now.
Yeah, I'm a current student here, and I was at the game yesterday, and I mean it's unbelievable that I was sitting in the stands just in awe on the fact that the stadium's packed. It was electric, and what I was watching was like watching paint dry. I mean, it is. I think it's a pure culture thing that we have going on right now. The lack of wanting to win, the lack of knowing what winning is like. You know, these kids, as you guys said, you know, 5-20 now, 5-22 in one score loss games. It's just they don't know what winning is like. And you know, I think that Scott kind of wrote his book. And then for the comment about not being an attractive job, I mean, Nebraska is, like you mentioned, they'll pay anyone any figure. You know, money's not the issue. Here, the facilities, you know, we've had a top 25 recruiting class every year under Scott Frost. It's just right now, it's just a culture thing. They don't know how to win. They don't know what winning is like. They haven't seen winning in 6 years now. And it's sad, but the fan base is always going to be here to support the players and the team. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, Nebraska is a savable job, but it's definitely going to be a long journey. The next step, realistically, is go to a freaking bowl game. That's like that. That's it. It also, lastly, is it can't get any worse, guys. It legitimately cannot get any worse. Home opener, lose to Northwestern, tied 17-17 to North Dakota with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter last week, and then you let up 630 yards at Memorial Stadium. It's crazy. You know, these guys need to learn how to win, and you know, I wish Scott Frost the best, but yeah, it's crazy. I'm just in awe.
What is that vibe like among the student body? And I know you're not
yeah.
a student body singularly, but you know, what's it like? I mean, what was it like after yesterday's game?
Everyone's like excited. Yeah, I mean, during the game, everyone was still like, you know, pumped and, you know, amped up, ready to go. I'm sure if you guys read the reports, as soon as the game ended, you know, some student section started chanting out, you know, fire Frost, fire Frost. At the end of the day, the students here, I think what's a little different, you know, me, I grew up a Cornhusker fan and all that. And, you know, when I saw Nebraska play, it was winning, quote unquote, that was under Bo, you know, 9 wins a year. The student body here right now, they don't know any different than losing. You know, we got to keep that in mind. The students don't know any better. Nebraska, no student here has ever seen Nebraska with a winning record. No student here right now has ever seen Nebraska go to a bowl game. And that's, I mean, if you'd have said that in the 90s, if you'd have said, or even early 2000s, if you'd have said, hey, when you go to school at Nebraska, over your 4 years, you will not go to a bowl game, you would have been laughed out of a room. And so right now, just the student body, I mean, they're upset, but what's so crazy and what's going to continue to happen is I'm going to, you know, put on my Nebraska jersey on Saturday and go watch them play Oklahoma and watch probably Oklahoma put up 60, 70 points on us. But we're still going to be there and, you know, root for these guys.
And that type of attitude, I think, again, speaks to how attractive of this job is. Any coach that's coming in here knows that not just the administration, but the fan base, the students, they already yes. are looking for, you know, we're not looking for you to beat Alabama next week.
No.
They're looking for, can you give us a good foundation to give us hope for the future?
Exactly.
And if you put in year, any
last
competent
year provided
team.
Some sort of glimpse for that. You know, like, guys, mm-hmm, last year, mm-hmm. we could have won every game last year. So that's why I think this year was so disappointing. That's why I think Scott got fired, and I think a booster called Trev Alberts last night and said, hey, I'll write the check. I want him gone. Is because this year, the difference between last year and this year, I believe we're a way better football team, but we're not even competing in these games. Like, this shouldn't be a game versus Georgia Southern. That's no diss on Georgia Southern. No diss against North Dakota or Northwestern. Obviously, they're just as good, if not obviously better than us. But it's just it's not the same. You know, last year we were in every football game, Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, all of them. And this year it just doesn't seem like we have that edge.
Well, thanks, Zach. We enjoy hearing from you. We want to keep us moving, but we appreciate all of that stuff. That was great. Hey, Vincent, you've been patient. We're going to try and get as many people as we can. We'd love to hear from you.
Hello, fellas. How are you?
Good.
Let's see. Well, I look at it like this. I mean, it's sad that it came to this, but at the same time, you know, it was a move that had to get made because, you know, I mean, he was given plenty of runway. I mean, four consecutive losing seasons, and it most likely would have been a fifth had he been allowed to stay. But as far as whether the job is savable or not, I refuse to ever be that fatalistic. I mean, like most Husker fans, I thought Scott Frost could bring Nebraska football back, not necessarily to where we were between 1993 and 1997, but at least get it back to where Bo Pelini and Frank Solich had it, you know, as far as winning nine games, maybe not every single year, but at least semi-regularly. And to your point, you know, it's not like we haven't been getting good talent to Lincoln. I mean, is it to Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State? No, but it's definitely good enough to where I think the very obvious part of it is there's just been a severe, you know, there's been a severe lack of development, you know, and so again, it's a case where it can definitely get back. I mean, as far as, you know, who we're going to end up bringing in, I mean, I've heard a few names here and there. I mean, a few guys that stand out to me. I mean, Mark Stoops would definitely stand out, Chris Peterson and Matt Rhule, and, you know, and of course, if you really want to swing for the fences, you can go for Urban Meyer. Well, I know he comes with baggage, but you know what? I see it like this, guys, and I'm going to give you this analogy. Nebraska football has been stuck in the desert for so long that at this point, I'm willing to eat the sand.
You know, and it's funny. He would literally be almost the opposite side of the scale from the Mike Riley hire. You know, I mean, that would be literally be going from Mike Riley to coach, you know, one coach later to Urban Meyer. That would be an interesting one. JD, I know you have some thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've talked about, you know, the attractiveness of a Nebraska job and being able to step up. I do want to get one thing out here immediately more than anything else. If we're going to be talking about names, I can guarantee you this. You can cold takes me all you want on this. Mark Stoops is not taking the Nebraska job. That man is going to stay at Kentucky until Kentucky forces him out. And the reason he's going to do that is because he has a clause in his contract at Kentucky that explicitly says he gets an auto-renewed extension anytime he wins seven games at Kentucky. Now, Nebraska might be able to offer him that same exact deal as well, but right now he gets to call all the shots at Kentucky. He has low expectations already. They are thrilled with the fact that, you know, he's now able to go against John Calipari and argue on whether Kentucky is a football school or a basketball school. But he's not going to jump to a gig like Nebraska when he's already got that type of command at Kentucky. It's going to be the same thing with Sam Pittman, who has a similar deal at Arkansas. But the rest of the names that you said, I think that is definitely up and open for debate. But I just want to put cold water on that right now. Mark Stoops is not coming to Lincoln.
And that was, well, J.D. Moore, not me, for the record. That was J.D. Moore, for if you're listening to this in the future. But Vincent, you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, well, you may be right about Mark Stoops, but you know, but here's where I'll push back just a little bit on you, is that I mean, yeah, he may very well not leave Kentucky. You know, you could be right about that, but I would also add this though, because as long as that conference includes Alabama and Georgia being at their current level, at some point Kentucky football is also going to reach a ceiling. And maybe at some point he realizes, you know what, I've gone as far as I can go here.
Yeah, the hunger. Exactly. I see what you're saying. I mean, perhaps that's, in addition to it being, you know, his beloved alma mater, Scott Frost, you know, UCF versus Nebraska, where you can go. Certainly Nebraska has the higher ceiling. Nebraska is one of the blue bloods. It still is until, you know, it may be in a period of extended dormancy, but that's a really hard history and title to extinguish. So I think it certainly Nebraska has that as a part of its identity, and it makes it attractive. You know, one thing that did strike me is Nebraska hasn't even been to a bowl since the 2016 season under, you know, it was the second to last season of Mike Riley. And it's stunning to think it's been that long. I think as we've been sort of discussing this, I agree Nebraska needs to just get into a position where it's getting in the bowls again and then competing for the division title in the Big Ten and eventually, you know, occasionally punching its way through and perhaps building from there. I think right now Nebraska's goal is to just rebuild to that level, build to a level where you're a contender. Go ahead.
Let's see, one more comment, and then I'll jump off and let you guys get to other people. But, like, I mean, I'll tell you this. I mean, you know, the longer it goes, and I'm going to piggyback off something another caller had said, is that, I mean, we've had well, five consecutive losing seasons. That's if you don't factor in this season. And I'll tell you, the concern that I have is the longer you go without turning it around, it, you know, because now you're going to get to where kids don't even remember the Bo Pelini era. And I'll tell you this right now also is that for all these years that we had fans bitching and moaning that Frank Solich and Bo Pelini were regularly winning nine games and that wasn't good enough. Well, to me, those fans are reaping what they sow now, because now it takes us 3 years to win nine games, because, you know, and that's not the type of football that I grew up with. Now, I know that 93 to 97, that was kind of an anomaly. I mean, that's a once in a generation run. And I'm not saying we can win nine games every single year like we did for 33 years, but I think there's enough material and enough resources to where we can win nine games, I'll say, 6-7 years out of every 10. I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation at all. But thanks for taking the time, fellas. Take care.
Thanks, Vincent.
Absolutely. Thank you.
It's fun to think, though, I was around, you know, following college football intently when Frank Solich was let go by Nebraska. And I know it was somewhat controversial then, but of course he followed Tom Osborne, which is a really tough act to follow. It was like, you know, and, you know, what do we have now? He went to Ohio, and now that Ohio just named their football field after him, the Frank Solich Field at Ohio. So it worked out well for him. I guess in the long run, maybe not his bottom line in terms of dollars, but certainly his legacy as a football coach. Chancey Oliver, what's up? You've been really patient.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I can see my mutual Jacob down below, so hi, Jacob. I guess do I sound all right, by the way? I'm in my small apartment, so I don't want to
talk. Sure do.
Okay. I guess some credential for a second. I work at one of the sports stations in Omaha. That's the big market in Nebraska for the last almost 4 years now. And so I have been subject to every press conference, every soundbite, and the vital signs of the fan base for almost 4 years now. And what I can tell you is it's just gone complete from the fan perspective. It's gone completely downhill. I know a lot of people are saying, oh yeah, like you guys, you know, from TV, like Memorial Stadium is still jam packed, but there's been a lot of, oh guys, we're doing this, you know, this fan program for kids, you know, like, you know, kids tickets are only $5 now. You know, you can come watch a Nebraska game. Or you got to, I believe it was late November last year, when all of a sudden tickets were now 2-for-1 to keep the sellout streak. Because I'm assuming the boosters were getting very irritated by that point last year. But to speak on Frost and his firing, I've noticed a lot of people say, oh, you know, his talent is different from South Florida, no, it's not. He has been subject to like the best recruiting classes in the West Division of the Big Ten. Talent is not a problem. It is development. And honestly, it's not even development from not getting better. It's development from they're getting worse. Adrian Martinez was better as a true freshman stepping onto the field against Colorado in 2018 than when he left here last year. Like, I'm glad he's got some wins under the belt right now in K-State. I hope he can salvage things from his sentence here. But you see it with, like, the transfer. Like, Nebraska's been subject to so many of the very good JUCO transfers the last few years. Like, Greg Bell in 2018, gone after a month. You had people like even right now from O'Shawn Mathis, you know, not a huge factor right now. It's just talent is not an issue. And maybe this is going to come off as me being condescending to the guy. I don't know him. I don't know him personally. But Scott has just been this incredible combination of arrogance and incompetence. Because he gets, you know, granted, that the 17 season at South Florida, or Central Florida, incredible. Taking down Auburn after you took the job at Nebraska, incredible. But as soon as you roll into Lincoln and say the Big Ten's going to have to adjust to us, not us adjusting to the Big Ten, say get your licks in now because we're coming back in year two, just saying weird things like I think it was referring to Indiana because Nebraska frequently draws Ohio State in the cross-division rivalry for the Big Ten every year. And he's just like, oh, man, wish we would get Indiana every once in a while. And then Indiana, you know, they'll put that up on the wall in the practice facility, and then they'll run us right out of our own stadium. Or it'll be Minnesota one year, and they'll say, oh, yeah, we're not wearing hoodies on the sideline. And then PJ Fleck and crew will row the boat to our Viking funeral. And like even this year when he said, oh, yeah, Donovan's got the O-lineman, puking this many times during practice. Like, why do you open up the program to just take full-on broadsides every other week? And then you couple that arrogance with just complete incompetence where it's just like you don't understand because – like, everyone's just like, oh, yeah, we were such a great team last year. And it's like, that team was packed to the brim of sixth and seventh years from the COVID season. Like, Ben Stilley, the D-end, I played against him my senior year of high school in 2016. He played for Ashland Greenwood. I'm 25 years old. I don't want to make it, like, diminish that defense, but I'm just like, that team, that defense last year, full of super, super seniors, and all the close losses, they come from sheer incompetence on the play calling or just preparation and practice. It was against Michigan, or it was Michigan State. We held the nation's leading rusher to, 4 yards in a whole game? And then one punt sails the opposite direction of the coverage, and the game is basically over. Or we have the team that's going to go to the playoff last year, Michigan, on the ropes. All we need to do is run them out of time, and we win. And we get strips. They get stripped, ball stripped and fumbled, and we lose the game. It is just incredible. It would be different if it was like something like the Detroit Lions frequently do, where they lose on like weird quirks in the rule book or just bizarre bounces of a ball due to random chance. But this is like falling on your own sword so many times that you don't even feel it anymore. Like I said, the fan base, like I would work the call-in show a lot. And when, you know, you lose to Iowa on the last second field goal, the callers are usually pretty mad. For like the last 3 weeks, they have just been so apathetic. Like, they're starting to wonder, like, what did they do that made the Lord so angry that this is what has become of, you know, the team that they watched for essentially their entire lives become this. That's all I really have to say, but I just kind of wanted to get that out.
A couple of words, certainly. I know it was really, I have to say that was very insightful. Thank you. Especially since you've seen and heard those responses from fans after these losses continue to pile up. And of course, you know, you could diss Indiana, but they've been the two bowls in.
Exactly.
In the last bit. But we really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us and giving us all of your thoughts on that.
Thank you.
Hey, Matt, you've been patient. You're also a Nebraska alum. Tell us what your thoughts are.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I just graduated from Nebraska. I should say I didn't grow up a Nebraska fan, but I've been watching the Big Ten for my entire life. But, yeah, for the past 4 years, it's hard to think, like, at this point, my entire college career was the Scott Frost era. And it was just pure failure. But like, I remember coming in and it was like, I came into the state of Nebraska for the first time and it was, you know, signs all over the place. Scott Frost is coming home. He's coming home. And then, you know, 0-6, boom. And then, you know, you finish the year looking strong. And the last guy that just spoke, Chance, or whoever it was, I think someone mentioned that like Adrian Martinez looked really good at the end of his freshman year, at the end of our freshman year. And then he started off his sophomore season and just looked way worse. And you look at it and you're like, there's got to be a coaching problem there. And then you think, okay, maybe it's talent. Maybe we're just not getting talent. And then you get the guys and you're saying, okay, we got the guys now. We got the guys. We got the coaches. It's not that issue. And like, okay, we should be a top 40 team. We should be a top 30 team. Like by this point, like, you know, by year four, you know, maybe he'll be a playoff coach, like maybe not a playoff coach, but a coach that gets us to a bowl game every year. Like this isn't a program that's dead in the water. It's just got the wrong captain. And I think like this program we should be competing for Big Ten titles. Like once every 4 years, I think, honestly. And it's so upsetting to see like just none of that happening. And, you know, I was, you know, in the state for four straight years. I went to every single home game, went to a few away games, and it, like every year the mood just kind of gets down and down and down. And it's hard to watch that. And you got to think like, okay, that's got to be a cultural issue that starts with the team. Like there's nothing that Iowa and Indiana have that we don't. That's kind of my main thoughts on that.
Well, Matt, that's got to be a dramatic way to spend your 4 years in Nebraska, especially football wise. And it's interesting to see because obviously they changed the offensive coordinator three times while he's been there. After that second year where Martinez looked to regress, they changed OCs. They went and did that again. You know, by the way, it's interesting to me, Mark Whipple, who has a background as a head coach, you know, some might say, oh, it was at UMass, but he had some other successful runs too. I mean, when he was at UMass back before they moved up to D1, he even won the equivalent of an FCS national championship is. When he was at UMass, but they went with.
Yeah, and I mean, even on, I was going to say, even on top of that, like Mark Whipple last year was at Pitt, and, you know, he turned Jordan Addison into the greatest receiver, and that's why he won the Blinkoff, and then he had Kenny Pickett turn into a Heisman finalist. I mean, this was supposed to be one of those last-minute, last-ditch hires, and I thought it was a coup that when Scott Frost was able to grab him. But as the college have been showing out, and as we've seen on the TV screens, has not exactly been the type of progression that we've wanted to see out of that coaching staff.
And that's not to say, again, not to take anything away from Mickey Joseph. He's been around the block. I mean, he had a decent few years. It was an NAIA, but I think he decided, like a lot of coaches sometimes do at the lower levels, it's if sticking around as a head coach there, he took on an assistant position at a higher division to kind of move up from there. And you see that quite often. I mean, heck, one of the people whose name is being bandied about a lot as a possible replacement is Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina. He got that job after he moved up to be the OC there, having been a successful head coach at the FCS level. So people move up all the time. But I mean, I just thought it was interesting to see Whipple wasn't selected as the interim head coach. Perhaps he's just tired and he's here to collect some checks. Who knows? And obviously do the work. But Matt, thank you so much for your input there. We really, really appreciate it. And it's going to be interesting to see how the team plays out the rest of the season, because obviously there's a lot left to be played. You know, Scott, we've also let you up. We'd love to hear from you. You're also a Husker fan.
Hey, gents. Scott with the Gen Red Pod. I do a podcast with my dad, and 28 years old, and was raised a Husker fan, and it's just been kind of an unfortunate decade or so, even with the inclusion of Bo Pelini as our head coach. It was still kind of unfortunate to see such a dramatic kind of result for the Husker program. And then with the conclusion of Frost as our head coach, I'm just very curious to see where Trev Alberts leads our program and what direction we're going to go. But like a lot of these gentlemen have been talking about, what I would just like to see is just compete. That's all I want to see. I'm not looking for a, you know, a national championship contending team. I'm not even looking to be the leader in the West every single year, year in, year out, competing with Ohio State, Michigan, or even a Penn State or Michigan State. I'm just really excited to see Nebraska be competitive again. And I would just really like to see that. I don't know exactly how we can do such a thing, because I really thought Frost was the home run hire. I know that all of the, you know, sports pundits across the board, everybody thought it was the home run hire, comparing it to a Nick Saban and crazy crap like that. You know, I honestly feel for the guy. I feel for Frost. He really truly believed that he was the guy, and I think everybody else in the state of Nebraska truly thought he was the guy. My question for you guys would be, what were the early red flags that you saw with the Frost tenure that made you go, I don't think he's the guy?
So I think the earliest red flags, I think, quickly were excuses. So there's been a couple of comments over on our main subreddit in those coaching forums talking about, you know, these were some of our red flags that we saw. And one of the immediate things that I can immediately think of was the excuses for losses. I mean, we had things where, you know, one of the mentions earlier on the show was when they played Minnesota and purposely wouldn't have the sweat jackets on because it was supposed to make them tough. And then suddenly when they lost, it was, oh, well, it was the sweat jackets. It wasn't anything to do with our play calling. It wasn't anything like that. But it was always somebody else's fault other than Scott Frost. It was a defensive coordinator's problem. It was an offensive coordinator's problem. It was because our guys, you know, didn't work out hard enough. It was because the media was mean to us. It was because insert. But it was never once, I did not prepare my team to get ready for this competition. I did not do this or I did not do that. I think that's one of the immediate red flags that you see in any form of leadership, but especially when you see that on a football program and you see somebody like Scott Frost refusing to take that initial blame. I think that was the immediate red flag of something is going wrong here.
Can I cut in for like 1 second?
Please.
Yes, please.
Sorry. I've never done a space before. But I think when a lot of like the mask fully came off on like what you were just touching on, JD, was actually the opener of last year against Illinois when Frost basically opened the press conference, was like, yeah, they came out with a five front, so we had to throw half the playbook out. And I don't know if that was a joke or not, but saying that with a deadpan like Scott usually has, it was kind of eye-opening to the rest of the people who are like aren't like knee-deep in this every day like a lot of us are. Or just because I got a text from my cousin like at the time. He's like, did he just say he threw out half the playbook? Like, I'm like, yeah, he did. Old Brett took his Wisconsin days and just made it basically the same. And I also remembered another thing about kind of the cracks in Frost was the 2020, the COVID year. Now I don't want to like paint myself as an insider. My little brother, his roommate, was a long snapper at the time at Nebraska. And basically when Kevin Warren announced that the season was no longer happening in August of 2020, I'm not sure if this is an NCAA violation or not, but according to him, they did not stop practicing when the season was announced as canceled. And so when it comes back and you see Minnesota at the time, I just looked up the article. They had 33 scholarship players out due to a COVID outbreak. And they still walked into Lincoln. I don't know if they kept practicing, but Nebraska did. They walked into Lincoln and took a victory away. And it's just stuff like that. It's just like you could, it's like little tallies on a prison wall, just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on to the next one kind of thing. But that's kind of what I wanted to add.
You know, one of the things that Scott said a second ago that made me think of in all the responses to the immediate news obviously Reddit, lots of comments, lots of threads. The comments are usually the most interesting because it's like this. We hear from people and their thoughts. It was actually from a Texas fan, RLRRR. He wrote, and I'm just going to breeze through this because I think it's quite applicable. A lot of Nebraska fans liked how it was phrased. You know, in all seriousness, I feel for Scott Frost. Imagine being the guy at UCF, and then your alma mater comes calling home. You didn't coach there. You played there. You won there, and they want you. And everyone's excited to have you back. You're the big man on campus. You're here to revitalize the program to what it was when you were the last BMOC, only to fail spectacularly, make yourself and your alma mater a laughingstock. They paid more to get rid of you. And, you know, he acknowledges that, sure, he gets to wipe his tears with money and all, but still, that's the worst. Herman failed at Texas, but he was only a graduate assistant, not a player. Sarkisian failed at USC, but he was only a graduate assistant, not a player. Scott Frost wasn't just a Cornhusker. He was the Cornhusker at the time, and he blew it horrifically. And I hope that people keep an eye on him. Now, I don't think – I'm sure Scott will be fine eventually, but that's kind of smart for him just to go in with all of that hype and then whiff so badly. Scott, I know you wanted to talk.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I really don't want to rag on Scott Frost all that much because, I mean, kicking a guy while he's down, I just don't like that. Yes, there were a lot of red flags that I could see in the past, and I'm not even going to get into them, but all the things that you had stated, I would 100% agree with. I'd say that if I were to create kind of a meta – analysis of Scott Frost as a leader is that, you know, I was in the Marine Corps and you could just tell right away who was a good leader and who was a bad leader. And from probably the beginning of the 2019 season, I started to kind of connect the dots where I just was like, yeah, there's some red flags here with this guy and specifically the accountability structure that he may or may not have had. But yeah, you know, you really got a feel for the guy. I mean, for 4 years, I posted this on Twitter. For 4 years, we needed a change on our offense, and our defense pretty much held everything together for us for those 4 years. And then this year, he finally makes the right changes on offense, excluding our offensive line, only for our defense to completely implode. And I consider that a special kind of hell because, I mean, if our defense was even remotely serviceable like it has been in the past, I think this season looks completely different. And for our defense to just absolutely lay an egg was probably the most unexpected thing. I mean, before the season, I made the hot take of, I think our defense takes a step forward. I thought with the level of talent that we had coming in from the transfers and the level of leadership that we had coming from behind our starters that we had last year, I honestly truly believe that our defense was going to take a step forward, and it just didn't. It's probably the worst defense I've seen since 2017, and that was an abysmal defense. And yeah, looking forward, man, you know, like, we've got to just get a coach in here that's stable, that's competent. Like I think Chance was talking about, we just need a guy that's competent, is willing to take the hits and is willing to do the right things and get the right coaches in here and make the changes necessary. I mean, you could say that about any damn coach in the entire college football landscape, high school football, NFL, anything. Like, of course, that is like the bar. Like that is the bar you have to meet as a coach. I'm just really disappointed that it didn't work out with Frost. Like, dang, that would have been quite a legendary legacy to leave behind as a coach. And goodness gracious, he fumbled that in every way possible. Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna run my suck much after this, but I love following you guys. Quite possibly my favorite Twitter account and follow on Reddit.
We get embarrassed when people do that sometimes, so we appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for your thoughts.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, you guys have a good one.
You too. Hey, Joe, you've been really patient. What are your thoughts right now?
Yeah, so can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear?
Sure can.
All right. So just had a couple comments, and a lot of people already touched on it, so just wanted to echo my agreement with the idea that Nebraska is still I think, a desirable job for the majority of, you know, the pool of potential college football coaches, for the reasons everyone else has brought up. But also, I would point out that Nebraska is still a member of the weaker division of what seems like it will be in the next 5 to 10 years, one of the two, you know, really important super conferences in college football. And with the announcement of a 12-team playoff coming, starting in 2026, there's much more of an opportunity for schools that are sort of in that second tier, that, you know, the non-Alabamas of the world, to really make their mark. So I think, you know, any Big Ten school is going to be a desirable job. And the blank canvas that a school like Nebraska provides to an incoming coach, provides a higher ceiling than a lot of the programs in the Big Ten that are doing better than Nebraska right now. So, definitely think it's a desirable position. Second, been seeing a lot of talk today, on sort of a different topic about people, who were saying that the athletic director should have waited until October 1st and that, you know, it was a waste of $7.5 million, to fire him when he did. The fan base of Nebraska is really the primary reason that Nebraska has still remained nationally relevant, in the 21st century. The Bo Pelini years were pretty good. But, you know, especially since Bo Pelini left, you know, there's really no reason Nebraska should be, you know, as nationally relevant as it is. And I think the immense level of fan support is, you know, a primary factor in that. And every week Scott Frost was allowed to continue to coach, just continue to do more damage to that. I think I can speak for a lot of the fan base that this change in and of itself makes me more interested in watching or attending the Oklahoma game next week. And second, and potentially even more importantly, Nebraska's playing Oklahoma at home this weekend. And you got a big TV broadcast coming into town. You know, Fox is bringing their boys into town to do that broadcast, and there's going to be a lot of coverage of that game, and in the lead up to that during that day. And this decision now changes the conversation that's going to be happening during that, instead of focusing on Scott Frost's tenure and the failures of that. You know, now Trev has basically bought a $7.5 million advertisement, where they can sort of talk about Nebraska going forward, and what the possibilities are for that new coaching hire. So I'll hop off and let you guys go, but thanks so much.
Thank you. That was some interesting stuff, and I agree. I think Nebraska, you've heard me say it earlier in the show, I think they're still a very desirable location for those reasons. It's still in the Big Ten. It's still in one of the two major super conferences that seem to be our future for at least the time being. And with that expanded playoff, you know, being less than the champion of a conference is still no less. I mean, still you have a reasonable chance to make it. I wonder if we'll start to see consistently the loser of the Big Ten, the loser of the Big Ten title game being an at-large regularly. We'll see. But I think certainly that's a possibility. I want to keep us moving because so many people have been wanting to request, and we love hearing from you. Gamecock Superman, what's up?
How's it going, guys? I mean, obviously, it makes total sense that they would hire Scott Frost. They should have probably honestly done that when they lost to Northwestern, you know, at the beginning of the season. Just terrible play calling, terrible decision making, you know, all the way around bad. They could have easily beaten Northwestern and gotten that win, and they just gave it away. So I'm happy for Nebraska that they finally moved on from Scott Frost. But one thing that I'm sort of interested in starting a conversation about is, I know we've talked about, you know, how Nebraska is a quote-unquote desirable destination, and I do agree with that. I think the fan base support is tremendous. You know, they have booster support, maybe not quite as much as, you know, a Texas A&M or a Texas, but the boosters are there. All the, you know, key pieces are there to be a good football program in the Power Five. But one thing you know, talking to a lot of Nebraska fans, especially the older generation, they don't see themselves as like their ceiling for the new coach being like a good football program that wins 6, 7, 8, 9 games a season, you know, maybe even 10 since it's in the Big Ten West, and then losing, you know, the Big Ten championship to, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State. They sort of still think that they, you know, they're the blue blood. They're one of the elites of the game. And they can sort of, you know, get whatever kind of name they want to get as a coach. They can buy whoever they want, you know, a big name hire like an LSU would do. And, you know, they can just get right back to winning national titles like they did in the 80s and 90s. And I just don't think that that is realistic. And I think a lot of the Nebraska fans who, you know, grew up in the 90s and watched the 90s teams need to sort of recalibrate their expectation for what Nebraska is in the modern college football. You know, I mean, I think the ceiling obviously is way higher than what Scott Frost had it at, but I just don't see, you know, Nebraska winning a national title in this sort of climate, you know, even with a 12-team playoff.
Certainly, I think, and you bring up a good point, there are always going to be that alumni group at a school like a Nebraska that are going to think, no, it's every year, it's back to the 90s again. And hopefully, and I know, JD, you pointed this out, most of the players now probably don't even really remember the Bo Pelini era that well. I mean, how did that math work out, JD? You told me that as an aside.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one of those things of, you know, you can talk to any old fan base, and they will assume that it will still be, you know, this is still our era of, you know, you could probably go to Tennessee, and they could probably still believe that in certain circle, it's still 1998. You could probably go to Virginia Tech, and they'll probably say, you know what, the next Michael Vick is right around the corner. We can do Beamer Ball once again to be in a national championship hunt. Heck, I'm sure if you go to certain parts of Minnesota, they'll go, you know what, that 1953 team, we can replicate that once again if we just got the right guy, don't you know? But it really all comes down to it. One of the other things is you need to remind players what their frame of reference is. One of the things that, you know, is not exactly the most fun thing to bring up is the current recruit that's coming in right now is graduating the high school class of 2023. And something that also makes me feel old, it means that almost all recruits that are walking onto the field right now for their official visits were born in 2005. And that's going to mean, you know, that famous 1 second on the clock during the Big 12 championship game. Listen, these guys who are currently going to Nebraska were in preschool when that happened for them. So they don't even remember these, you know, 5 championships from the 70s and the 90s. They don't remember the Big Red Machine. They have no clue who Tom Osborne is, and they aren't interested in that education because what they've known for right now is Nebraska is a team that has missed out on 6 consecutive bowl games. It's continual losing, and for that reason alone, you're not going to be able to turn around regardless of what older folks say because, you know, there might be a certain part of the fan base that believes that you can turn around and start winning national championship games. But for the folks who are based in reality and for the most part, the people who control the purse strings recognize that that's still a long path to go and it's not going to happen overnight.
Well, and jump off of that comment. My next question is, what do you think would be a realistic hire for Nebraska going forward? Because I don't really think that they're going to be able to poach a coach from a Power 5 institution at this point. I think, you know, certainly Hugh Freeze, maybe Urban Meyer is on the table if you want 2 options that have a lot of baggage. I mean, they've proven they can get results in the Power 5, but again, you know, it just depends on if the athletic department wants that baggage and if the boosters want that baggage. But I'm just wondering, who do you think would be a good culture fit and is sort of like on a good trajectory for a Nebraska, I would say an above average, you know, university or a university with an above average reputation for football. And
first
they play in one of the premier conferences.
First and foremost, if you can get Urban Meyer, you can get any Power 5 head coach. I'm just telling you that right now with that realisticness. But when it comes down to it, I think right now it's probably Matt Campbell and Matt Rhule versus the field right now for Nebraska for their next head coach. Matt Rhule, you're probably going to have this weird timing of does he get to pan out in the NFL this year, but if he – you know, kind of stumbles out of the gate with his quarterback situation and the salary cap issues that Carolina has had recently, we might be able to see him open. And if he wants to come build a new program, I mean, he built Baylor out of nowhere after the Art Briles scandal. He built Temple out of nothing. And you give him the resources that he can get at Nebraska, that's an opportunity. Matt Campbell, same exact thing. He's created the greatest stretch of Iowa State football in more than a century, and he's right down the road on I-80. And I think he'd also be a great opportunity as well for Nebraska. But ultimately, I think there's going to be a lot of names thrown out there, kind of like how we had with the USC job last year, just because it's the first one out on there. And more than anything, I want to hear what y'all think you're going to be able to see with that. So Gamecock Superman, really, really appreciate your thoughts. And Bobak, I know you wanted to get on up here too.
Well, no, I just wanted to go ahead and keep us moving. So Tin Horn Productions, what are your thoughts? You've been patient.
Well, first off, to say, hail Southern, go Eagles.
You've been having some
the big win.
That you did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Statesboro went crazy. I was actually out of town. But the feed from Statesboro and all my Georgia Southern people has been insane. It's been a long time coming. A lot of people don't realize that Georgia Southern's a really storied program. I mean, 6 national championships at the FCS level. We've been extremely relevant there. But ever since moving to FBS, we won in 2014, the conference championship in the Sun Belt, defeated the Florida Gators in 2013, 3 straight bowl games, 2018, 2019, and 2020. So a lot of people were sleeping on us, and it just feels good to get the win. But in terms of Scott Frost and him leaving Nebraska, I guess that's the icing on the cake with the whole Clay Helton from USC going to Georgia Southern, then going on to Lincoln and knocking off Scott Frost and the Huskers. It's just a great storyline for us, and I know the Sun Belt had a big weekend this week. But honestly, as in terms of the Nebraska coaching search, I would love to see Nebraska try to go after somebody like Dave Aranda. I think he's a really great coach, and he would be able to bring some prominence, some juice back into the Nebraska program after, you know, what they call a disappointing loss. I think we really played a great game against Nebraska. People discount us and say how bad Nebraska played, but we played really good too. We put up 642 yards on offense, which I think I saw somewhere that it was the most yards put up against Nebraska at home in Memorial Stadium. It's at least in the top 5, but that's just incredible numbers, and what a turnaround it's been for Georgia Southern and our program.
You know, I just want to say that's a great point, and I've been careful not to say Georgia Southern, you know, they're kind of become the side story in all of this, which is a shame because certainly they earned the win, and it's a program. I'm aware of Georgia Southern's history, and I love it, from Irk to Paul Johnson in the national championships. They won there, the beautiful Eagle Creek. All of that tradition is utterly fascinating, and I remember the first thing that we ever covered as RCFB Media was the 2015 Sun Belt Media Days. And so I dove heavily into every Sun Belt team because I covered it. And I always tell people Georgia Southern is like, they don't realize how much tradition is there and how serious they take football there, and which is fitting why they moved up with App State, because those two schools, I thought, from the FCS were both schools with lots of tradition, lots of passion. And in Statesboro, they care about football there. So I just want to say I totally hear you there. And again, as I said, Clay Helton, maybe this is it. This is the perfect fit for him. And we'll see. I mean, it's a little early. Certainly teams have had a wild win like that, and then you find out, oh, that was a sort of lightning in the bottle that didn't quite capture it. But I think definitely nothing to say wrong about the Eagles. They went in and they took care of business and got a win that I can't even imagine how excited it is. And it was on a day with so much, you know, insanity with, as you said, App State, you know, going in and beating Texas A&M, and then Marshall just joins the conference. And what do? They go and beat Notre Dame. It was a banner day for the conference. Certainly probably the best day, I'd say, in total for the history of the conference in terms of just doing so much, you know, so many great wins in such a, in such a week, for sure. But thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure.
We appreciate you. And, you know, as I say, Gata, you know, get out their asses.
yeah, I remember
Gata. That's it. G-A-T-A, if you ever see them do that, that's something to know. Hey, Tattoo, you've been patient. What's up? Tattoo Baker.
Sorry, I was no worries. I had my phone in my pocket as I was doing laundry. Okay, obviously I'm an OU fan. Love Nebraska. Like, when they came down and last year, a lot of, like, rubbing elbows, really just wanting to have, like, a – I don't know, just like a good time, because honestly, they're family. We haven't seen them in a long time, and they came down here. It was super respectful, right? So, like, what I say is, absolutely. I'm not coming from like a negative place or whatever. I really feel like if they can't get Matt, because a lot of them want Matt, I don't think a Randy would come to Nebraska. But I feel like maybe if he would ever come back to college, and he'd already won a national title in the Big Ten, like if Tom Herman, with being a running quarterback offense, to be at Nebraska. Like, just give Tom Herman a chance.
JD, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that one.
God, I mean, does the man have success? Yes, he does. Has he been able to show that he can recruit, especially on a high level, and kind of get back into that Texas market that some folks that Nebraska thinks that they need to be doing? Absolutely. Would it be absolutely entertaining for an outsider like myself? Yes, that's why I've endorsed that hire. But I think more than anything else, you know, if you want to kind of take some of the worst of all the previous coaches that you've had and kind of put it up into one maelstrom, at least when it comes to like character, I mean, oof, that's going to be the hard one out there. You'll have the fieriness of Bo Pelini, you're going to have some of the game decision-making that we saw with Scott Frost, because again, this is a guy who was good at coming up to the moment, but he was not great in games that he should have won. You got to remember, his final season at Houston went 9-3. He got the huge wins over Oklahoma. He got the huge win over Louisville when they had Lamar Jackson on the Heisman hype. And then he suddenly turned around and absolutely blew it to a triple option Navy team. I mean, this is kind of what you're going to end up being stuck with if you decide to go with that hire. But I still love that opportunity, because I think it would just be absolute chaos from an outside perspective. And I think Nebraska would rise up to the occasion in the games that they need to. But I think there would still just be some mind-blowing head scratchers that happens with that. And I think you know, maybe we end up seeing Mike Riley part two, trying to come back after that to be the nice guy after that.
JD, I just want to throw in a crazy hire, and I mean, this would never happen, but imagine if Nebraska just hired Jeff Banks. Why not just cut to the crazy immediately? Have, you know,
exactly, bring us the stripper monkeys, make her the offensive assistant.
Yeah, I mean, just have what was the monkey's name again? Oh my gosh, Paul Assassin was the girlfriend, but what was the monkey's name?
I am blanking on that right now.
Oh, was it Gigi? No, I don't know why that name's coming to my head, but anyway, imagine
Gia, that's
Gia,
what it is.
That was it, yeah, Gia. You got a new, we'd have a new mascot for a new season, you know. Imagine it accidentally popping Little Red or something, like that would be amazing.
And JD, that's why I brought up Tom, because obviously if you have Matt's underperformed for the most part at Iowa State, but also too, maybe because he's at Iowa State. But I was thinking, like, maybe Tom could get him over the hump rather than be like a Matt. Like, if he comes to Nebraska, Matt does, and he does the same stuff that he does at Iowa State, it would be a very big disservice, you know, because you're not even better than Pelini.
You know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, though, because I think that's kind of what Nebraska is looking for. Like, listen, even though it was in a weird COVID year, you had a New Year's Six win with Matt Campbell. That had never happened before in the history of Iowa State. And especially with the resources that they've had, he's brought together consistent winning seasons to Iowa State. Again, I just want to stress that again. Consistent winning seasons to Iowa State. Now, he might not be able to get them, you know, to the national championship conversation, but I think right now, more than anything else, Nebraska is trying to figure out, hey, how do we consistently win 8 games again? How do we consistently get in bowl games again? How do we get on the national radar again? And I think Matt Campbell absolutely does that job with still being able to instill the culture that Nebraska wants to have as well.
Hey, Gage, we wanted to bring you in. I know you may be an ISU fan, so which would be kind of a fun take to hear in all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you letting me on. Voice is a little sore. Our Cyclones had a big dub against the Hawkeyes, finally.
Were you in Iowa City?
I wasn't in Iowa City. I tend to not have a great time when I go to Iowa City from our history there and our performance at Kinnick. So no, I actually was in Ames. And it was the most Iowa State, Iowa game that I've ever seen. It was wash, rinse, repeat. Just a typical Iowa State game. That drive by Deckers, wow. Like, first start in Kinnick, but I'll stay on topic with Nebraska. I do have a lot of buddies that are Nebraska fans. And it's also typical that Matt Campbell is, like, the primary target, right, with all of our news outlets and stuff like that. And I love that you touched on the culture that Campbell has brought to Ames, Iowa, right? Jack Trice Stadium looks like a completely new stadium compared to 10 years ago, right? Before Matt Campbell came in and done or built what he has built in Ames, Iowa. And so I kind of think of it from the AD perspective, because I am a huge Jamie Pollard fan being at Iowa State. He's brought us Dresser in wrestling. He's got our coach back for basketball that we're up and running with now. And I'm just trying to think from the AD perspective over, they recently grabbed Hoiberg from our basketball program. And I guess I know Fred has ties to Nebraska, right? But I don't know. I'm biased being an Iowa State fan, but if I see Campbell go over there and be a Husker, oh my gosh, that would be devastating.
You know, we would be remiss if we didn't also mention the bridge. That is, like, the hottest topic in Iowa State. I mean, how can we not mention the bridge? The video.
Oh, my God.
There's a couple of memes, too, that have popped up. I mean, they're real. Like, I think it was somebody's wife or girlfriend surreptitiously filming him and his sheer excitement as they were driving to the game at the bridge. You know, this is going to entice recruits.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool what they're doing. I mean, for those who don't know, Iowa State, because of all the success, is now bankrolling this huge project to basically build up the game day experience. And the key part, the first thing, I don't know if it's the first thing, but one of the key things was connecting the stadium across a highway, or at least some kind of, I wouldn't say highway, but a busy road. And this pedestrian bridge they've built is, you know, it's substantial and it glows at night and it looks neat. But that has become like a topic of conversation in Ames, is that bridge. But and I think you're right. I think he's, you know, Matt, as we said, built that culture. And I know JD's gone in on that. And he's been patient. You know, gosh knows, he's come up as a candidate every single offseason because he's built something in a program that, you know, I remember – gosh, was it 2002? And I forgot the QB they had, and he was just a great QB. And it was
Seneca Wallace.
Seneca Wallace. And, you know, I remember that winning streak that eventually they finished like 6-6, but it was huge. The insanity, because I now live in the Twin Cities, and that was when I just first moved here that year. And the wild, you know, all of a sudden you saw how many Iowa State fans live in the Twin Cities, you know, because suddenly they were all everywhere, you know, in red, completely hyped for the Cyclones. But I know exactly how important that is to the program, and why some people who may not be familiar, why do people keep bringing up Matt Campbell? It's like, no, you don't realize what he stepped into and what he's built there. But I do wonder if this is going to be the right spot for him, if he's just that happy being where he is in Ames and being in a place that appreciates it and the type of games he's putting there. And by the way, real quick comment on the Cy-Hawk game, because, you know, or Elastico, as they like to call it in some quarters, that was spectacular. I know when we had a photographer on the sideline for our CFB, and when he sent me his photos, and I had to create a Twitter card for it, I picked the photo he had of a ball popping out, I think on the goal line, from one of the Iowa State players, because it just felt the most fitting photo for you know, the game yesterday. But JD, do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, again, every single offseason is when you hear some kind of rumor of Matt Campbell. I mean, last year it was what, Notre Dame was going to be the big one that was going to sweep him up. USC, yep. USC out there. But it's one of those things of, you know, this is the opening job for the 2022 cycle. It makes sense to go with Matt Campbell. Again, this is a guy that he played at Mount Union. He has a strong connection to the Midwest. And it's always been wondered what would be the job that could get him to jump. And it's why I've never believed earlier of, you know, oh, he'd take the USC job, or oh, he'd take the Florida job, or anything else like that. The only reason I give this one a little bit more credence is because it's actually in that footprint of a place that he might actually go to. It's not going to be somewhere far across the country. It's really only a couple hours drive west on I-80, and it's still within the footprint that he and his family love. We know that he works without an agent. He normally does one-on-one deals with individual ADs, which that could mean that we have a little bit of a wait for the Nebraska hire if they're especially trying to target him, because he's not going to talk during the regular season. But it's going to be one of those things of for what Nebraska wants and for what they need to get checked off the box. There is no better candidate right now than Matt Campbell. Now, of course, will he take it? That's always the great question, and it's been the great question for 7 years. We'll see if Nebraska is the one that pries him out, but it might be one of those things of if Nebraska isn't, I think we could probably put to rest the idea that Matt Campbell will go anywhere, at least until the Ohio State job opens up.
You know, JD, I just want to add something to that, because you bring up an interesting point. Each week that passes, after you let go of a coach this early in the season, people start to wonder, and the stress comes up. Oh, can't Nebraska hire somebody? Wow, they're not able. You know, it happened last year when USC at this point had already fired their coach. And then, you know, Lincoln Riley surprised. But setting that kind of shocker aside, most of the time I remember what that conversation was happening. Crazy candidates were coming up as weeks went on that were being thrown out there by the media. I think my favorite was somebody said hypothetically they could at USC could try the crazy idea of not hiring a head coach and instead having two supposedly superior offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and have one of them kind of alternate who might be the person speaking to the press. I mean, that's how crazy it was getting as it was moving along, because USC simply hadn't hired anyone. And to think that, you know, Matt Campbell being his own agent might be busy with the season and not want to talk to anybody, that can make it awkward, you know, especially for the Huskers, because then they're going to, I can imagine Trev Alberts would get the pressure as the AD from the same boosters that probably said, here's a $7 million extra, just get rid of the guy. Well, you know, what are you doing there? And he's going to have to be probably making excuse. I mean, I don't say making excuses, but that's a tough, you know, the politics involved within, you know, the high level athletic departments, you know, it's hard to fathom, especially each one can be different. I mean, but at a school like Texas and obviously they seem to be in a stratosphere in terms of dollar amounts, but Nebraska is still up there and they still have a lot of, you know, a lot of pressure from a lot of folks who do remember the 90s and before, and people who do remember the 70s. So it's going to be interesting for them. Hey, Max, you've been really patient. What's up, man?
What's up? How are you guys?
Good.
So I'm just a lifelong Nebraska fan. I was born in 97, so I've missed everything. Good. And I often ask my dad on Saturday nights, why the hell did you do this to me? But I just want to jump in when you're talking about the coaching search. So two things to know about this new AD. First off, he is a snake. You know, He cut the UNO wrestling program when he was there the night they won a national title and changed the locks before they could get back. Like, he's a killer. And I think he wants to make this legacy hire. And I also think he's already made some moves. Like, he brought in Mickey Joseph, and I think he had a deal with him that if Frost didn't make it, he'd be hired. Because otherwise, why would Mickey Joseph make such a lateral move? And also, like you said earlier with Whipple, you know, you thought maybe he could have had it anyway. So I kind of wonder if he did this giving Mickey Joseph a little chance to audition, because the jump from wide receiver coach to head coach is crazy, don't get me wrong. But He's an incredible recruiter. He's an incredible developer. So I'm kind of interested to see just what he can do with the rest of the season. Kind of gives it a little more juice than what it has been. So that was my only point of what you think about that, which I know it's a crazy jump for a coach, but he kind of has the pedigree and he's an alumni. So that's all I got.
Hey, I mean, first and foremost, wide receiver to head coach worked out for Clemson and Dabo Swinney. So, you know, you take that whole interim route. It has been done before in precedent. Now, is Mickey Joseph going to be the guy? I don't know, but it's going to be one of those things of, I think the worst case scenario you might be able to have is Mickey Joseph does a fairly good job, not a great job that makes him the clear favorite, not a bad job that makes it clear that he shouldn't be considered, but a job that is pretty good, and it makes it difficult to decide to go with somebody else. I mean, Bobak, you can speak on this much more extensively than I can, but that was the issue that Ed Ogeron had at USC back in 2013. After Lane Kiffin was fired, he still was able to get a couple of big wins by the end of the year, but not enough to convince USC brass that he needed the job, and that led to a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of difficulties for USC down the line, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And with Ed Orgeron, the reason he didn't get the job, and it's funny to watch how that decision has changed from year to year since then, because I remember, obviously, the 2019 season ended perfectly for LSU, so suddenly Ed Orgeron looks like a genius, and then the next couple of years, it seems like it might have just been the player he had at the time. We've seen that happen before in different programs. But at USC, the thing that soured the administration to keeping him on was not that he wasn't winning games, because he certainly didn't. USC somehow still managed to win double digits that year, but it was that he wasn't ready for those important games. Like, he fell flat at Notre Dame, and he fell flat with UCLA, and those are the two main rivals. And that, I think, to an extent made the program a little less attractive. Now, by the way, I just wanted to say one thing. It's interesting to hear someone who isn't thrilled about Trev. Only because I've been following college football for a long time. So I remember when Trev Alberts, people don't remember, he was a college football final on that initial crew when it was Reese Davis and Mark May and Trev Alberts. That was the trio. And Trev Alberts and Mark May would have to kind of, you know, be the ones to argue. And then infamously, actually wasn't that infamous, because I think the internet, or at least social media, wasn't there to spread this. Trev Alberts basically thought he could get more money. And so his approach to getting ESPN to give him more money is, he said, I'm not going to go on the show unless the next season, unless you give me a higher salary. And ESPN said, thank you for calling. That was very nice of you. We're going to bring Lou Holtz on as your replacement. And that's how Lou Holtz ended up on College Football Final. And then now I think most people only think of that show as Lou Holtz and Mark May with Reese Davis in between. That's how that lineup changed. Was spectacular in terms of bad, you know, bad decision making. But of course, you know, you brought up the incident with the wrestling at Nebraska Omaha. That's difficult, especially with non-revenue sports. But I mean, you know, wrestling is a huge deal in the Midwest. I mean, folks outside of this area don't realize how big of a deal it is.
And they pretty much self-funded everything too. Like, if you look at the numbers, they needed almost nothing because they were so self-sufficient in funding.
I remember.
It's kind of it's tough.
And they used to have football too.
Yeah,
although I don't know if that was while Trump was there.
Yes, it was, and he did it to get hockey to the level it got to, which was super impressive. Don't get me wrong, and that's why he got the job. But it's kind of tough. You either look at it through, wow, look what he did with that hockey program, but you can also look at it with, wow, he made a lot of enemies and cut a lot of throats along the way.
Certainly though, every AD would love to have that big splashy hire with a head football coach. So if he nails it and he knocks it out of the park, people are going to love him. And we'll see. I guess this is his chance. This is his like defining moment. He's not stupid. He knows this is his defining moment. So
we'll absolutely
see how that goes.
Well, yeah, and I'll hop off. The last thing I wanted to say was my deep, deep, deep worry is he's going to strike out on all the hires, and he's going to end up going to Wyoming and getting Craig Bull because they were roommates. That is the one I'm afraid of. So have a good one, guys.
That would be interesting. And I know Craig Bull, he's got a Nebraska background, so he'd be an interesting hire, but man, that would be controversial. That would be, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, they were roommates in college. That's why it's like a fear.
I didn't realize Bull was that young or Alberts was that old. I mean,
Alberts is that old. So yeah. Bull, I think the only reason that You know, if we get to the point that Bull is the last one, I think that means like 20 other people had to strike out first. Now with Trev, who knows how that actually works, but Craig Bull, 64 years old. He has a losing record right now at Wyoming. It's 47-51 overall. And he is now in his ninth season with the Cowboys program. He has a grand total of two, count them, two winning conference records in the Mountain West ever since he took over. If that ends up being the guy that they say, hey, you know what, this is going to be the guy to turn around at age 64 going into 65 for this next season, something has gone horrifically wrong with this coaching search.
Well, you know they won't be talking about Wyoming. They'll still be talking about North Dakota State at that point, because he was they'll be like, hey, here's the guy that made this dynasty that's had several other coaches since. But, you know, I don't – yeah, exactly. Things will have
hey, Mike Riley put wide receivers in the NFL. That's what they always said.
Indeed. Well, hey, thanks, Max. Hey, Logan, you've been really patient. We'd love to hear from you. What's up?
Yeah, well, I just want to start and say, while we're on the topic of NDSU, I would say if it's a conversation of that dynasty, I would much rather see Klein, and I think he's done a lot of good work at Kansas State, and I think his run game would be a compliment to Nebraska, and maybe we can finally get an emphasis on some linemen. However, that's not at the top of my list. Say, I just kind of want to talk about the interim spot and also just kind of like the history of Nebraska a little bit with their hiring. Like Max, I was born in 98, so my fondest memories in Nebraska is losing with 1 second in 2009 and crying for hours after, so only good thoughts and memories. But yeah, I mean, I think the Mickey Joseph interim spot is about as good as you can ask as a Nebraska fan, because I think he brings a lot of the culture pieces that hopefully can keep this team glued together and maybe have some good games here. And you know, I'm going to the game next week. I don't expect them to beat Oklahoma, but having a guy like Mickey there gives me some hope we can at least be competitive and, you know, put on a good show. But I think Nebraska's had an issue in the past of looking too much to former Nebraska players and trying to do the quote-unquote 90s culture, which obviously is great. Like, I've been told all about it. I've seen the games. Like, it's great, but the world is so much different. Like, back then it was all strength programs and Tom Osborne was a legend. I mean, it's just, it's different now. So I think it's a dangerous game to play because, I mean, firing Frank Solich in, what, 2002, then you go to Bill Callahan and he switches it up and it's just a mess. Then you hire Bo Pelini, who is a good hire, but I would argue suffered from a weak assistant staff and there was too much focus on the Carl Pelini issues. And then after that, you go to Mike Riley, which is not even a nationwide search. You just pick him up off the street. And then Frost obviously was a prodigal son. It just didn't work out. So I would just really like to see, I think we finally have some good assistant hires. If I'm going to give Trev Alberts credit, he made some splash hires this year. I mean, absolutely getting, I'm forgetting his name because I'm nervous, but yeah, getting the LSU guy, he is obviously vital, given just his recruiting background. And now he's stepping into the interim coach, and I think he's going to do a great job. But I think, like, getting a guy like Bill Bush for special teams, which besides the onside kick this year, which was for Scott Frost call, there's been absolutely an increase in production there. And then Whipple as well, just getting an experienced offensive coordinator. I think for once we've got the assistants in play to make a transition here while we're looking for a new coach. I would just really love to see Nebraska kind of step out from looking in the past and kind of, as Trev said in his presser today, it's time to look forward. And I'm just really interested to see what we can get out of this. I mean, Kleiman's a good option. Heck, I would love to see us kind of dip into the Alabama staff, and Bill O'Brien is sitting as offensive coordinator. I'd love to see us take a shot at him, but realistically, we're not going to see a coach until the season's over. And in the meantime, I think we've got a good interim to, you know, at least get us some production here and hopefully keep some players on the roster that transferred in.
I think you've touched on a lot of key points, and I agree with those hires. And you know, as you mentioned for a second there, and I know you get a little in the panic moment, but it's Mickey Joseph who was brought in from LSU and he's obviously now the interim head coach. But I think they have an opportunity. And Bill O'Brien, it's interesting you brought up two people that I think have been put on shortlists. Bill O'Brien, he's been kind of floating out there, and he's been at Alabama as their OC. Whether or not he could leave, I think you're right. I don't think he would leave before the end of the season. He's been an attractive target, and Nebraska is certainly going to be at this point, you know, the only target. But I mean, it will be an attractive candidate unless something truly crazy, crazy happens. And certainly, oh my gosh, you said someone else who is also on my mind. Yeah, Kleiman. Yeah, I think he'd be a great. I think he's probably the more attractive of the NDSU alumni, unless they decide to pick up. I think they're not going to go the FCS route, even if it is NDSU. So I think he would be an attractive hire as well, for a variety of reasons that you brought up too. And I just want to tease JD. I know he's got to run soon, but Gary Patterson's been brought up. What do you think of that one, JD? I've seen two different lists he's appeared on.
Listen, man, it's a wild thing to see Gary Patterson get floated on names again. He's about 62. He'll be 63 heading into next season, and especially what we saw in the last 4 to 6 years that he had at TCU. I am not confident that he'd be able to thrive in a pressure cooker that Nebraska would be, especially when there's going to be a huge narrative of what is Gary Patterson's second career arc. I don't think it's going to be like a Chip Kelly deal where, you know, he can somewhat flounder out in UCLA, because, you know, right now Chip Kelly has yet to play in a bowl game. He is 20-25 overall with the Bruins, but he can still go down to the grocery store and not get recognized by anybody. Gary Patterson kind of thrived with that way in DFW with TCU, and I don't think he'll be able to turn, even with this short tenure that he's had as being the assistant to the head coach at the Texas Longhorns program. I don't necessarily see it working out if he goes up to Nebraska, but again, if we're talking about outside hires and somebody who is watching as a neutral third party, I mean, he'd be right up there with Tom Herman as people that I go, I don't know if this is going to work out, but I will watch with a very fascinated eye.
Man, I love what you said about Chip Kelly. That's so LA. I bet most UCLA students don't even know what Chip Kelly looks like. It's just, it's the culture. I grew up out there. It's, you know, I remember when Paul Hackett was the head coach while I was a student. I was going to all the games, but man, Paul Hackett, I couldn't pick him out of a crowd. Now, Pete Carroll, yeah. But sometimes it's just, that's just the LA attitude, which for better or worse is what it is. Hey, thanks, Logan. It was great hearing from you. Peter, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me. Fun fact, not everyone knows this, but Chris Patterson actually interviewed back in 2007 for the Nebraska job before we hired Bo Pelini. And he said that they were in the interview, it was almost like they were just dead set and they just weren't interested in seeing anybody else and they were just going to go for Bo. But, you know, I wouldn't really be interested in having Patterson as Gary Patterson, not Chris, I guess. But I wouldn't really be interested in having him. I think the game has kind of passed him by. I think he had a really nice run at TCU. He built them into an extremely respectable program. But, he, you know, you just kind of have your time. And if you can't adapt to the way the game goes, then, you know, you're kind of out. So I wouldn't be too excited about that one. I think that you know, some people have kind of brought up the idea that everybody in Nebraska wants to get back to 1995. And I think that's kind of just like a played out, overblown opinion. What Nebraska has wanted for a really long time is to win more games than we lose and be competitive week in, week out. I don't think that's too much to ask. And I don't, and we haven't gotten that with anyone, including Bo Pelini. Now, if it were me sitting in the AD chair in 2014, I wouldn't have fired Bo. But, you know, if you put those two points of criteria in front of Bo's resume, it's a failure, because we weren't just losing, you know, and the 22 one score losses are so damn brutal. But you know what else is brutal? Getting run on for 408 yards in three quarters up in Madison, you know, year in, year out, and getting just dragged around by Ohio State. And, you know, if you're 8-4 and you're respectable, like Iowa often is, you know, then that's one thing. But just getting run out of stadiums week in and week out, like it felt like a lot of the time with Bo, that's why that change happened. Now, after the fact that they made a bad choice in firing him when they did, then they made a horrible hire with Mike Riley. Like, you know, I mean, all that's set and we can, you know, pitter patter about that. But, you know, that all that Nebraska fans are looking for, like I said, is a respectable product that wins more games than it loses. And so the idea that everybody wants to win championships next year is is really not the case. And it's kind of a misreading of where the fan base is and where we understand our place to be in the college football landscape. So that's just kind of my thoughts.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting. I like that perspective you brought, especially with the Bo Pelini, you know, decision. And I think that was what was striking at the time. It made sense why Nebraska did it. Although, and I know we've actually had Pelini on the program in the offseason with his son, and you could tell it's still a touchy subject to him quite a bit in terms of how, because you could tell he was like, how's Nebraska doing now? You know, it was coming through in his attitude now. And that's definitely a rough patch between the two. But all that said, how that was handled, because I mean, when you end up with Mike Riley on the other end, people are like, what are you thinking? So I think with all this discussion we've had earlier about Trev Alberts, this is his defining moment. And he knows that he's got to have a good hire, because otherwise people are going to just say, this is like when Nebraska hired Mike Riley, what was that going on there? I think that's going to be, we're going to see how it is, because that decision and how after the 2014 season, how they did that transition has haunted the program since. And in some ways, I don't know if it's overshadowed the surprise some people had when Solich was fired when he was.
Yeah. Although I would say that the vibes around it, if we kind of, you know, we were talking about earlier them going through like 20 different guys, the vibes around that would be much more like 2004 or the 2003-04 offseason, because that was when Steve Peterson, the athletic director at the time, was making calls left and right and people weren't biting. And so we got all the way down to Bill Callahan, because he had four or five other names that he was calling up, including Urban Meyer. And they didn't want to go because they thought that, man, if 9-3 or 10-3 isn't good enough for Nebraska, I mean, I don't want to be involved in that. And frankly, that was probably the right decision for them, considering who we had in positions of power at the AD level, at the chancellor level with Harvey Perlman. You know, there's just been a lot of bad administrative leadership at Nebraska beyond the coaching leadership that has contributed to these situations. And it sort of mirrors the on-field product. You know, you had our best athletic director in the last 20 years was Tom Osborne, probably. I mean, I think Trev's a pretty good athletic director, but, you know, he hasn't been in the position very long. But, you know, Tom was okay and Bo was okay. All of our other athletic directors have been really bad and the on-field product has been really bad. And so it's just kind of interesting to see how that mirrors. And I hope that, you know, I got a little trust in Trev. So hopefully it pays off and hopefully puts a little bit better product out on the field with whoever he hires.
We appreciate all your thoughts, Peter. Thank you. That was a lot and good. I mean, so thanks so much. And I'm going to try and close this out a little bit, but I do want to get the last folks in the queue on. Nathan, what's up? You've been really patient. Oh, I think we might be getting it. We'll get you up. I know sometimes when people are on hold for a while and then they get up, sometimes the ability to speak kind of messes up. DC Lucas, if you want, we'd love to hear from you. I see you connecting. Of course, all of this is happening to me now. Sometimes this happens. Hey, DC, can you hear me? Oh, looks like we're dealing. Well, feel free to unmute. We'd love to hear from you. We'll keep letting people up. Let's see. Let's let you all up. Let's see if we can get to everybody. Get some voices in here as we talk about what's going on. So let's see here. Lee, are you able to speak? Or Nathan, or... let's see here. Spearman.
Hey, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Hey, Lee, I heard from you first. Why don't we go with you? And I promise to get to all of y'all who are up here right now.
I'm just a little confused as why they went where they went. I'm sorry, I didn't catch all of it. Maybe it's been discussed, but the man they put in place is interim. Like, I'm confused, but he seems very underqualified.
You know, there's so much that goes on with these decisions, and I get what you're saying there. And I think a lot of people were sort of surprised it wasn't Whipple, only because Whipple had been a head coach at other programs, most recently UMass. And before UMass moved up, he was there. He'd been there twice. He'd actually taken them to a FCS title before. And sometimes, and don't get me wrong, Mickey Joseph has been a head coach, although it was at the NAIA level and with Langston, and then he just sort of stepped out after a couple of years to sort of take an assistant position at a upper division, which you sometimes will see as a career move. Usually there's a discussion inside the program. I'm not sure. I'm sure everyone in the program kind of agreed. We can only speculate now why he was selected, and knowing my luck, there's been an article published while we've been doing this that has explained it, but we'll find out more. It's definitely going into the fire immediately, and perhaps we're going to find out real quick whether or not he – I mean, I can understand why some folks wouldn't want to be the interim head coach. Maybe they're not optimistic about how the program is going to be, or they would like to restack it. I don't want to make that kind of speculation entirely, but it was – people have questions, and I get it, but we're going to have to just see how he goes on the field. And then, unfortunately, he gets a heck of a first game to kick off the season. When, you know, a respectful rival with Oklahoma comes to town for, you know, their rivalry game. But Lee, you bring up a good question, and I think that has been something that has been I think asked by others as well. So thank you for that. Spearman and Colin, I know you're both up here as well. Let's hear from your thoughts.
Hi, so I'm a Nebraska and a Michigan fan. I suffered through Rich Rod, and I suffered through Brady Hoke, Michigan man Brady Hoke. So when I want to put in a different perspective, Michigan's bigger than Nebraska. Do not get me wrong. I mean, Michigan, you know, Nebraska has had more national championships in a more like recent time. Obviously, they shared one more most recently. But it just feels like to me that there's been a lot of like, coaches that I'm like, Arenado from Baylor's not coming here. Let's be honest with ourselves. Urban wouldn't come here. But I do think Matt Campbell is realistic. And I do think that we just need stability. I think that we need stability. We need somebody to come in here. And we're not going to be able to win a national championship at Nebraska. There's 13 or 14 programs, if we're being honest, that are better than Nebraska as a job. That I, you know, if I went on, I could name. Okay, but the 12-team playoff, it's different now. Like, it feels different. I feel like if we make a head coach and we hire a head coach that can get 9 wins in a bad Big Ten West, granted, USC and UCLA is coming. USC looks like they're legit. I'm watching USC. Their offense is, wow, totally different. But I feel like if we can get a Matt Campbell, I think it could get way better. We just need stability. I don't need 11 wins. I just want a coach that averages 9 wins. He'll go 8-4. You know what I mean? But like you said, competitive. Looks like they can win. You know what I mean? Bigger games at times. But, yeah, I don't agree that Nebraska fans think that it's 1990s because it is difficult. I think people are aware that recruiting – To Lincoln, Nebraska, where the talent pool, I'm sorry, it's just not as good as the SEC. You go down south, football is different. Like, there is talent all over in a close proximity. But I do think Matt Campbell, I do believe, and I hate saying this because, you know, Iowa State is very close to Nebraska, so it's not a rival, but, like, you know what I mean? Iowa State kind of is in a way.
Well, they're all from the Big
Eight. I think you would change the program. I think you would change this program. I think you would totally change it.
You know, and I appreciate that, you know, your thoughts on this. And I can see why Matt Campbell and as well as Chris Klieman over at K-State would be attractive fits because they're already in the region. They've proven they can do a lot with, I don't say a little, but certainly not what Nebraska has in terms of built into the program and the amount of boosters and fans that Nebraska possesses and still continues to possess. They certainly could seem to be, you know, good good analogs. They would walk into a situation, you wouldn't be hiring someone who just is like the Bill Callahan decision to go completely out of left field. They just, you know, crashed and burned. So certainly Nebraska, I think if they made either of those two hires, a lot of people would go, okay, yeah, that seems like a good fit. That seems like there's a lot of potential there. Nebraska could potentially build on those and go back to where they were. And as you said, as we've been trying to say, at this point, Nebraska just wants to go consistently to bowl games again, because they haven't been to one since 2016, which is kind of incredible under Mike Riley. And now they're just trying to build that foundation. And then from there, we'll chat. And the playoff, especially going to 12, has suddenly made winning the Big Ten not necessarily the desire. Just being in that upper echelon of the Big 12, pardon me, the Big Ten, on a given season and perhaps snag an at-large bid. And the Big Ten and the SEC certainly seem like the two conferences that are going to benefit from playoff expansion in that regard, because they're at large. Their teams that didn't necessarily win will probably still be desirable for a whole lot of reasons. Thank you, Colin. Hey, you know, I wanted to get to you, Spearman. What's up?
Well, as a Nebraska fan since 06, it's been tough to watch recently, and like that stretch of Bo Pelini, that still wasn't a fun time. But like I know someone said Matt Rhule earlier, and then as the Panthers look today and then in the future, there's no way Matt Rhule stays after this year. So I'd love to see Matt Rhule at Nebraska.
Yeah, it's always tricky with the head coaches. You know, Mike Riley, there's actually kind of a funny story about Mike Riley in that position, only because after the 2001 season at USC, when they fired Paul Hackett and they made three different plays that failed horribly. They tried to get Mike Bellotti of Oregon. He said no. They tried to get Dennis Erickson, who was then at Oregon State. He said no. Then they went to Mike Riley because he had previously been the offensive coordinator at USC under a successful regime. And he was still at the San Diego Chargers. He wasn't doing well. Everyone knew he was basically a dead man walking as soon as the season ended. And he still stuck around. I I'm sure he said, oh, golly, I'd like to, but no, in the way Mike Riley talks. But he didn't do it. And then, of course, he ends up at Nebraska down the line. But I think it's always tricky, and I get why a head coach in the NFL would want to stick around as long as possible. You want to get that paycheck, and you want to force them to fire you and get whatever versus quitting, unless you're, Nick Saban, and you realize that you are ready to be the next college football messiah, which is exactly how he did that. He ain't walking through the door for any other team. That was, I think, a one-time only deal for the. But Matt Rhule would be a great fit. I think it's just the ultimate question there is going to be how that ends, and I think he would, what he did at Temple, especially now that we're seeing Temple kind of go back to where they were when the Big East kicked them out back in the day, and they were just so miserable. And at Baylor, which he built a foundation that Aranda is certainly doing a good job with. You know, last night's game was unfortunate for them, but that was still, BYU is no slouch and is going to be joining them in the conference soon enough. So I think Matt Rhule would be a very attractive hire, but there's just always that trickiness when you're dealing with someone who's presently in the league, because there's just a lot of money for them, and I can get why they might want to stay. You know, folks, we have been on this for a long time, and I know JD had to step out. We're going to go ahead and start wrapping this. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and let on. You know, I see DC Lucas. He's been really patient. Nathan and Troy, I'm going to let you guys on, and that's going to be the last three speakers, just so that we can get back to our regularly scheduled program off the space, because this was kind of a surprise news. But hey, let's see here. I hate doing this, but Troy or DC or Nathan, whoever can speak first, we'll start with you, and we'll get to all three of you. Don't worry.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Hey, Nathan, what's up? Yep.
Hi, yo. So I'm in Lincoln right now. I'm a junior at the University of Nebraska. I'm in the Cornhusker marching band, so no matter how bad it gets, I'm required to be there with a smile on my face. My question is mainly because I will be at every game for the rest of the year. What is the community, people who know more than I, thinking about Mickey? And like where I'm thinking here is like we in the Frost era have changed everything but Frost at one point or another. Some of these major coaching positions we've switched 2-3 times. We've gotten new players in the transfer portal in everywhere that matters. It's been we've tried everything but fire Frost. And what I'm like coming from is I my dad's military, and he was telling me about this. When you're in something like football or in something that requires a great deal of morale to push forward, to go out there and put your body on the line, you're not going to do that for a leader that you don't trust. And I'm looking at the talent we've got on this team right now, and I'm thinking the common denominator here is it was Frost. So do you think that Mickey can do anything here, or do you think he's too young, too unqualified, or do you think it was really more of a symbolic thing, and now the players can get that fiery spirit back?
You know, you bring up a great question, and I know we've said it's hard to predict, but one thing I will say, you know, you bring up Mickey Joseph, it gives him a chance to be the CEO coach without sacrificing necessarily one of your coordinators. And certainly bringing Mark Whipple was, as we've said before, a bit of a coup for Nebraska. It seemed like he would be a really attractive candidate to get the offense moving. And then, as one earlier caller said, then the defense kind of lets you down. But keeping those two guys in place to focus, on the offense and defense respectively, gives Joseph, who has been, as we said, has been a head coach for at least a couple of years at the NAIA level before he voluntarily left to become a coordinator at a higher division team. So, I mean, that's a positive. He wasn't like let go because he was miserable. He was at Langston, took him to a couple of, you know, winning seasons. It's NAIA. It's a little difficult. It's a little different animal. It's more like D2 and D3, somewhere in between with how they work, but we'll set that aside. So now he's there. And he can make the decisions. And maybe that's exactly what – because, I mean, that's been the biggest critique about Scott Frost. The decisions just seem to be awful sometimes on the field. We all remember the onside kick in Dublin. I think that – I mean, will that be one of those moments where people go back and say that was the moment where he was – you know, the time was ticking, when everyone is watching that game, a bigger crowd than probably typical that would watch a Nebraska game, and they see that and everyone's like, oh my gosh, why are they still working with Scott Frost in year five? That if he can get by and make the decisions that give Nebraska, the coaching decisions that give Nebraska that opportunity to squeak by in a couple of those one possession games and in those games that they've been losing consistently in all this time, I think that would go far for showing where he is. But unfortunately, the sad answer is, Nathan, is we can't say. You know, it's not, we're going to have to wait and see how he does. And we won't know until we get to that point. But it isn't the best. But I got to say, being a part of the band, it's awesome. I mean, we love bands here at RCFB. They're a big point at every level. And you're going to be a front row seat to all of this at this point. So you get to see exactly how this is going to play out. And shout out to all the other folks out there who played in band. I haven't. I wasn't a band person, but I know how big a deal it is, and I admire everyone who does that. You know, two of the other callers who up here, accidentally, they've lost their connections. So, Big Red Corner, we're going to have you be our last caller. What's going on, man? What's up?
Hey, man. How's it going? You know, this is coming from a Nebraska fan here. I don't know how many you've had. I'm sure you've had others on here. It's what I've been talking about a lot on my profile today is I want a coach. My biggest issue with Scott Frost is he was so quiet, and he wasn't necessarily a very good speaker, but when he was up there talking, even when he's coaching, he just seems so quiet. And you take that in contrast with Clay Helton at Georgia Southern. I was at the game right by Georgia Southern sideline. That those coaches are getting their players fired up. They're wanting them to play. They know what's coming. They're there to play. And in all the games, whenever you look at the Nebraska side, you don't see that energy. And so what I want them to get is a coach who is willing to give the energy and fire up a team. And because we just haven't seen that with Scott Frost, even in his first year, you never really see. Like the big contrast I had was when you look at like old tunnel walk videos, just for a different comparison, you see the players going through the tunnel. They're jumping up and down. They're excited. They're ready to play. But every tunnel walk in the past 5+ years or so, they're just walking out to go out and play. They're just, why there's no energy. There's no excitement. They're just walking. And I feel like just a little bit of energy would go a long way with a coach who would get these players fired up to play.
You know, I would be remiss if I didn't then say, you know, I have just the coach for you, Ed Orgeron. Go Huskies.
That's literally exactly what I said to my old man today.
Yeah, he would be the pure energy you need to get that feeling. And frankly, if he got hired, I'm pretty sure something went wrong in the hiring process if somehow Ed Orgeron ends up as the head coach of Nebraska. But I would, you know, as JD kept saying with folks like Tom Herman, we would all be very interested in watching how that goes. So Nebraska would certainly get eyeballs.
That would be weird, but yeah, that is a perfect example of someone with energy. And, you know, Ed, and that's one of my other issues with Scott, is he seemed too scared to chew a player out when they needed to be. I know maybe it happened probably just off camera and stuff, but we never saw a player get chewed when they needed to be. But Ed is not like that. Ed will rip into you if you're doing something wrong, and he will make you better because of it. And that's exactly how my dad prefers to coach. And that's kind of the style that I've grown into liking. But it seems like an issue with coaches overall nowadays is they're a little too soft to discipline a player when you need it. I mean, I guess that's part of Nick Saban's charm too. You know, he doesn't let that stuff fly. And that's why, you know, minus the Texas game, where that was probably the worst Alabama discipline I've ever seen, they're usually pretty contained.
Yeah, definitely the end of that game, you could see Nick Saban losing his mind over his players doing the horns down. He was not happy about that and had some choice words caught on a hot mic nearby. But, well, you know, that we'll see how it turns out. I mean, I think all of us are going to be curious to see, you know, there's been lots of lists that have been made about possible head coach hires, you know, everything from Lance Leopold at Kansas to Chris Klieman at K-State. Matt Campbell obviously has come up a bunch, especially on this space.
Lance was actually Lance was definitely my first man up. The issue is he's so new at Kansas. I think if he puts together a complete season here, everybody goes like, wow. And then he'll be on. I think he's already on the list a little because he's proven to be a pretty good coach. But if he puts together a good season here, I think he skyrockets into the top three for Trev.
I agree. And if he doesn't make this coaching season, he'll definitely be a prime. Because, I mean, he did. I was impressed when Buffalo picked him out of a D3 program, even though if you know anything about D3, you know he was the Nick Saban of D3 there while he was at Wisconsin Whitewater, which has been good, but not quite where they were under him. So, I mean, he would be interesting. I'm not sure. Again, I don't know if he'll make this particular cycle. Well,
hey. And then there was the other issue where I don't know if it was discussed earlier, but did you guys talk about how Nebraska fans are hellbent on Urban Meyer?
Oh, we've talked about Urban, and he'll be interesting to see. I don't know. It's certainly we've heard opinions in all directions on whether or not he would want to be there or if Nebraska could go after them. Personally, I think Nebraska would be able to get the money to hire whoever they want. It's Nebraska. It's still a blue blood program. They could get anybody. They were able to get $7 million extra to not wait until October to fire Scott Frost. The money is certainly in that program.
No, money is not an issue.
Money's not an issue there. But I think that's what we're going to remain to be seen. Well, hey, you know, I wanted to thank all of you.
I just don't want the.
Yeah. And thanks for joining us.
I just want the baggage with Urban Meyer. I think when I think of Urban Meyer, I think scandals, and I can't get that out of my head.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. He would literally be going the opposite direction from the Mike Riley hire. Like, he wouldn't get two more extremes and going from Mike Riley to Urban Meyer.
You have a very nice man, and then you go to a not very nice man. It doesn't work. That's not what I want.
He's got passion, though, so we'd see with your criteria earlier. But we'll see how all that goes. Thanks for joining us, man. And I just wanted
I appreciate
it. Yeah. I wanted to thank all of you out there for joining us. This is RCFB Talk 72. We put this together as soon as we heard what Nebraska had done, and we could kind of free our schedules, come and talk to all of y'all. I know JD had a bounce earlier. JD Moore is usually here with me. My name is Bob Akhayeri. And we do call-in shows every Tuesday night, so we'll look forward to hearing from you, as well as special guests that we announce as soon as we have them. But I hope all of you have a great rest of your Sunday. It's been interesting. There's some NFL being played, and we're going to see where the Huskers go. Can't wait to see how they do against Oklahoma next week. On behalf of all of us, thank you for listening. Now, I'm going to hang up and listen.